Welcome to episode 207 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com. It is Saturday, February 25th, 2012. Got a lot to get to this week. Elimination Chamber thoughts, Raw thoughts. I've got a little something to say about The Undertaker and the fans of Minneapolis. I've got something to say about The Rock and this so-called anonymous person. I'm sure you've all heard about this by now. I've got actually a lot to rant about this week. It's one of those weeks. None bigger, though, than my rant on The Rock, which we'll get to a little bit later on. But first, somebody posted a link on my Facebook page earlier in the week to something called The Warrior Show. And I had to click on this. And it's the pilot episode for a show that is being done by The Warrior, where apparently he goes around, rants and raves and curses at people like a crazy person, and puts them in the gym, forces them to work out, and it's just 30 minutes of pure mayhem. So on this particular episode of The Warrior Show, which is not airing anywhere right now, it's just on YouTube. It's being put out by Sumerian Records, I guess, which is the record company that Warrior is working with on this. And in the first episode, the first band that he brings into his gym, he's going to whip them into shape, is this rock and roll heavy metal band called Asking Alexandria, which I'm sure at least some of you are familiar with. I've heard of them before, but I really, beyond just hearing of them, know nothing of them. They look like... They certainly look like a bunch of winners. So it's Asking Alexandria in this episode, and Warrior just puts them through the ringer. I mean, he just insults them, he berates them, he just makes them do things that they simply cannot believe they have to do. And, you know, the one thing that struck me watching this thing, which I thought was awesome, I have to say. I mean, Warrior is a crazy person, but I just thought this was great. And I'm watching this thing, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, here I thought I used the word fuck too much on my show. I mean, my God, this show makes the Sound Off sound like Blue's Clues by comparison. This guy, every other word out of his mouth is F this, F that, but he, you know, the Warrior. I mean, he does it with such intensity. You just think his head is about to pop. But I was entertained by it, all through and through, almost 30 straight minutes of this crap. And it was a little slow in parts. You know, the beginning part is Warrior sitting down with them, trying to interview each one of them and get to know the band a little bit more, and he seems like a swell guy, and then out of nowhere, at the drop of a hat, he turns into this maniac. But for the 30 minutes, I was entertained. I wouldn't mind watching this on TV every week. And my favorite part of this episode, which you can find if you go on YouTube and you type in The Warrior Show, it should be the first thing that comes up. My favorite part of this episode, there's a clip where Warrior has all the band members lined up side by side. And like he's a great general who's giving them marching orders. And he's just tearing into these people. And he looks at, I guess it must be the lead singer of the band, I guess. I don't know. And he looks at the guy. And because you see, Asking Alexandria, I mean, some of these guys, even while Warrior is speaking with them, they're guzzling wine out of a wine bottle. I mean, these guys don't seem to give a fuck. And Warrior walks up to one of them. He's obviously very upset by this. And, well, I'll just play the clip here. You can hear it for yourself.
You drank a bottle of fucking wine. That's fucking disrespectful to me, you motherfucker.
Wow. I think that clip should be played at every dinner party all over the world after someone finishes off a bottle of wine. That would be awesome. So anyway, that was pretty much the episode. I mean, I'll let you watch it for yourself if you would be so inclined to do so. You can find it on YouTube. The next episode apparently has him terrorizing the band IC Stars. I guess he's doing this with bands under the Sumerian Records label only. And I admit, I haven't got a clue if Sumerian has any really reputable bands under that label, but I, for one, would love to get Warrior to do one of these things with the likes of Miley Cyrus or Justin Bieber. That, to me, would be the definition of must-see television right there. So let's hope The Warrior Show finds a home on cable, because as long as he keeps saying fuck this and fuck that, he sure as hell ain't going to find a place on network television, not in this country. Last weekend, WWE had its Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. I am happy to report that I went 3-for-4 in my predictions. I only missed the Jericho one, which apparently was not even decided until the day before the show. They didn't even know whether CM Punk was going to retain the title or not. He did. I thought it was probably the weakest Chamber pay-per-view they've ever done, but I didn't hate this show as much as other people seem to. I thought the ending fell flat, even though, you know, we had a clean finish, we had a decisive winner, the correct winner with John Cena going over Kane. You know, with even Zach taking up so much TV time as part of the storyline, it felt like it was missing something. You know, it felt like we were being set up for a twist at the end that never came. I was also doing some live blogging during the show on Twitter, and I asked this question. This just struck me as soon as the pay-per-view ended, and it bears repeating here. Why is a show called Elimination Chamber headlined by an ambulance match? Can someone explain that to me? I mean, it would be like creating a pay-per-view called WWE Ambulance Match and headlining it with an Inferno match. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you have two Elimination Chamber matches on the same show and you don't headline with one of them, you've got your priorities all screwed up. I mean, if you didn't want to end with Daniel Bryan, the heel, going over and beating Santino to end the show, then just have the Raw Chamber go on last, as it should have, with Punk going over at the end. I mean, it's absurd that you have two Elimination Chamber matches and you have two world championships in your company, and neither are featured in the main event. I mean, that's fine for WrestleMania this year, since Rock vs. Cena is the real main event. It's been built up for a year. But for a show like this, I mean, there's just no excuse for that. Now, on the flip side, there were parts of the show that I enjoyed very much, not the least of which was the gigantic Solomonster sign that made TV on the hard camera, no less, during the main event between Kane and Cena. My thanks to Noah Wing and his girlfriend, I presume it was his girlfriend, for creating the sign and holding it up. It was actually two signs pieced together that when pieced together read Solomonster. I actually missed it at first because I wasn't paying attention, and it was pointed out to me later on by a lot of you guys. You could see it just as Kane and Cena went to lock up at the start of the match, and then a couple of more times, actually, during the match. So thank you again. That popped me big time. That made my night right there. And we need more Solomonster signs at these shows. So anyway, that aside, most of the stuff I liked actually came during the SmackDown Elimination Chamber match and involved the World Heavyweight Champion Daniel Bryan. You know, I got to say this. For all the complaining that people do, myself included, for various reasons, I couldn't help but see Bryan in that match last Sunday, and Punk as well, for that matter, both as the defending world champions, and feel proud. I mean, I still think it's really cool, personally, that these guys are in the positions that they're in right now, and they're both going to WrestleMania as the champion because they deserve it. You know, this is going to be Bryan's first WrestleMania match on TV after his match with Sheamus last year got bumped off the show. And he's going into his first WrestleMania as the defending World Heavyweight Champion. I don't care if his match does open the show, which it probably will. He's still the champion. And it just validates all those old shows that I did singing this dude's praises from his Ring of Honor days, you know, before he even set foot in a WWE ring. I mean, I think we should all just take a moment to be happy for these guys and really savor it before it all comes to an end. Now, I really like the John Cena training video on the show that they showed. They showed a video of him down in Florida with the developmental guys. Seth Rollins, the new FCW heavyweight champion, by the way, finally made his WWE pay-per-view debut here, which gives me hope that we'll see him on television soon enough. You know, they're going all out to make John Cena into a likable guy so people will stop booing him. Even if they succeed in doing that on the shows between now and WrestleMania, he's still getting booed out of the stadium on April 1st. I mean, there's no doubt about that. The show is in The Rock's hometown. You know, CM Punk went into Chicago as a heel at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view last year, threatening to leave the company. And John Cena was booed coming out to the ring as bad as I've ever seen him. I mean, just watching that on TV when Cena's music hit and he came out, it almost felt like that building was vibrating. They were booing so loud. I mean, what do you think is going to happen in Miami? But that having been said, I actually thought the video was pretty cool. I mean, him working out and lifting weights doesn't really do much for me. But they did a very good job of making him seem like a normal, down-to-earth kind of guy, giving the younger guys advice, and they're all palling around and having fun. And you could debate whether or not this should have been on pay-per-view. This was like a long commercial for WrestleMania on a show that people are paying $50 for. but I still thought it was pretty good. I thought the spot in the Elimination Chamber SmackDown match where Big Show stalked Daniel Bryan and climbed into his pod was awesome. I mean, it was really unique. You know, it's something we've never seen before. And who would have thought that Big Show, of all people, would be the guys to pull something like that off, climbing down into somebody else's pod? The place went nuts for it, as they did for the finishing sequence between Bryan and Santino. And as I predicted last week on 206, the crowd was clamoring for him to win the championship. I still think you could have done something similar with William Regal and had them go for like 6 or 7 minutes at the finish with some great wrestling. But it's hard to argue with what they did here because the building was shaking. It was so loud. That's what people in the building actually said. Really dramatic stuff, and to me, much better than the Raw Chamber match to start the show. What a mistake that was. Starting with your WWE Championship match, teasing an injury to Chris Jericho, making it seem like he might actually come back out later in the show, and in the end, absolutely nothing came from it. I mean, nothing. Even the next night, it was just this fake injury that they scripted. Nothing came from it. Again, it goes to what I said before about this show falling flat when it was all said and done. It felt like something was missing at the end. The other thing I could have done with that, especially in the Raw match, were all the backdrops and the body slams onto the steel platform. I mean, Dolph Ziggler in particular took way too many bumps onto the steel. I mean, there is no way he woke up feeling good about himself the next morning, and he's lucky he didn't get seriously injured. It just made me very uncomfortable, and you know, it just made me feel almost this tension, like something bad was going to happen at any moment. You know, expecting these guys to go out there and take bumps on the steel like that, to me, is almost inhumane. You know, I didn't enjoy that. I cringed every single time. Beth beat Tamina Snuka to retain her Divas title in a pretty good match by Divas standards. We had a terrible segment on the show with Hornswoggle and Natalya. The Natalya farting gimmick continues. It's not funny at all. It's just downright embarrassing. Vince McMahon, you know, Vince McMahon reminds me of Nelson from The Simpsons and how he bullies people with these gimmicks. I could just picture him backstage pointing at this on the monitor and laughing. I will confess, though, when Hornswoggle made the cottage cheese joke at Vicky Guerrero's expense, I did laugh at that one. I'm ashamed to say it, but I did. Generally, this comedy of theirs misses the mark with me, but you know, even a blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then. I thought that was pretty funny. This all led to one of these impromptu matches that I fucking hate on pay-per-view shows, where Jack Swagger beat Justin Gabriel in 3 minutes with the ankle lock. Nobody cared. But hey, at least the U.S. champion got a match, right? This was up there with Kane and Chris Jericho starting a feud over coffee, and Edge and Booker T starting a feud over Japanese shampoo. This time it was cheese. We had the ambulance match with Kane and John Cena. No Zack Ryder. He was busy insulting Jack Swagger on Twitter during the show. No Eve either. They decided to save her for Raw the next night. They had a good match. You know, it wasn't an excellent main event, which I think is what this show needed to save it. They kept selling how dangerous an ambulance match was, but I wasn't buying it. I mean, how is it any different than any other type of gimmick match? You know, the only difference is that you need to throw your opponent in the back of an ambulance, which is what John Cena did to Kane after giving him an attitude adjustment off the roof of the ambulance onto a bunch of crash pads, which actually, you know, thankfully they were well hidden off camera, so it actually came off as a really cool visual, even though live, according to one of our listeners, Steve, who was in attendance, it was obvious that Cena dropped him into a 4-foot-deep box of foam. But, you know, this was kind of like Cena giving Batista off the attitude adjustment off the stage in Batista's last match, although he actually did injure his tailbone doing that stunt. Cena put him in the ambulance, and off it went. Cena stands tall at the end, showing absolutely no ill effects from his horrendously dangerous battle that he was just in, we were told, which included him, by the way, being chokeslammed through the announce table. But Cena looked totally fine at the end and pointed to the WrestleMania sign, which just filled me with joy and glee, as you might imagine. So, that was the Chamber on Sunday, and then came Raw on Monday, and what a show this was. Not a single match on the entire show that I could really call good, yet it had some really good stuff on this show. I say not a single good match, largely just because it was a bunch of 3 to 4 minute matches thrown together that really didn't mean anything, and the Battle Royal was marred by one really terrible injury to Wade Barrett and a bunch of near misses that really could have been catastrophic for WWE only 6 weeks away from its biggest show of the year. I mean, they're lucky more people didn't get seriously injured on Monday. But this show is really all about the two top matches at WrestleMania, and I thought they did a really nice job in building interest in both those matches. we'll do the good, the bad, and the ugly here. We'll start off with the good stuff on this show, or mostly good stuff anyway. The Eve Torres turn at the beginning of the show was very odd. It just seemed to come out of nowhere. You know, she's standing there with the Bellas, and she's being all heelish after not being heelish at all. I mean, you can say that she was acting heelish by kissing John Cena and all that, but the way that she's been behaving and acting and the things she's been saying, it just came out of nowhere. All of a sudden, she's a heel. You know, it felt like I was reading a book, and when I flipped to go to the next chapter of the story, 20 pages had been ripped out of the book. You know, having said that, I like the opening a lot. Once Eve came out to plead with Cena and had her nervous breakdown in the middle of the ring, she's really good at crying on the spot. And just came off like a total whack job. I don't know why all these people are riffing on her acting ability. I see all these people, oh, she's a terrible actress, this Eve. Have these people seen the acting of some other WWE superstars? Eve looks like Meryl fucking Streep out there by comparison. She's fine. This felt different, felt somewhat chaotic, quite frankly, with her freaking out. Referees came down, a doctor had to come down to the ring to calm her down and subdue her. And it felt like shades in some respects of the old Mickey James character, you know, and how obsessed she seemed to be with John Cena. I liked it. It was definitely unique, and I thought she did a hell of a job. What did bug the shit out of me, and I give TNA a lot of credit for at least attempting to make sense of it when they have a camera backstage eavesdropping on people's conversations. In WWE, they have no shame. I mean, Eve is standing there telling the Bellas about her diabolical plan without paying any attention to the fact that there is a camera right there. I mean, is this supposed to be the Young and the Restless or something? I mean, you want to call yourself a male soap opera, that's fine. That doesn't mean you should film your shows like one. I mean, that really annoyed me. But again, the rest of it I actually liked. They announced Ron Simmons for the Hall of Fame, class of 2012, a well-deserved honor for the first African-American world champion. He had a good run also as part of the APA with Bradshaw. But let's not discount his impact on The Rock's career as well, because it was that feud between him and The Rock, while both of them were members of the Nation of Domination, that really launched Rock as a heel in WWF. You know, Farouk was the leader of the Nation from its inception. And The Rock, of course, was this bubbly babyface who got hurt, and when he came back, he was a heel, and he joined the Nation. And what ended up happening was over a period of several months, The Rock got a big head, and he thought he was the rightful leader of the Nation, and basically kind of moved Farouk out of that role and took over as the leader. And it was that feud that really launched him as this cocky, arrogant singles heel who won the Intercontinental title and then feuded with Ken Shamrock and then feuded with Steve Austin, and of course the rest is history. So he played a very pivotal role in The Rock's career as well, and I haven't heard people talking about that, and I think that's something we all should keep in mind. David Otunga won a match. Let me repeat that for those of you who don't believe me. David Otunga, yes, Mr. Bowtie and Thermos, won a match, and he did it clean. He beat Ezekiel Jackson, a former Intercontinental champion who was selected by Teddy Long to represent SmackDown in this ongoing feud between Teddy Long and Johnny Ace. Apparently, it's going to culminate in some sort of match at WrestleMania, either between the two of them or each one of them, I guess, may choose a surrogate, perhaps, from their own brand. And ultimately, this will, I have to guess, it will end with there being one general manager for both shows, which I'm totally fine with. I'd be fine with having no general managers for either show and just having Vince McMahon come out when he has to make a decision, because everybody already knows that he's the chairman anyway. But apparently that's where this is going. But I'm putting this in the good column, believe it or not. David Otunga, that is. I rarely do this. But first of all, he wasn't in the main event, which is okay. You can have David Otunga on the show as long as he's not in the main event. But Otunga actually won a match on his own. I couldn't believe it when I saw this. He's still a shitty wrestler, though, so you'll never be able to convince me otherwise, no matter how hard you try. So then we had the Undertaker segment on this show. And I'm putting this in the good column because at the end of the day, I thought the interplay between Triple H and the Undertaker was great. It ended up great. The announcement of Hell in a Cell was a big deal. The people responded to it. It definitely adds an element to this match that I think it would have been lacking otherwise. You could have Shawn Michaels in there as the referee and just have a regular singles match. Again, and build up, will Shawn favor his friend and help end the streak or not? You know, and you can do that. But making it a Hell in a Cell match adds so many more layers to it. And I am at least somewhat hopeful that we'll get some blood in that match. I guess we'll find out. But that's why I'm putting this in the good column. But make no mistake, this was a segment on the show that made me more angry than I have been in a long ass time. So The Undertaker comes out. This was The Undertaker's first live in-ring promo in almost a year. Okay, he's been gone since WrestleMania last year. He popped up the last couple of weeks. He had that one live appearance. He came out with the wig a couple of weeks ago, but he didn't speak. He just stared at Triple H, and they stared at the WrestleMania sign, and that was it. So here comes The Undertaker for his first live promo in almost a year. And he doesn't have the hat. He has the hood. So I guess they're going to maybe hold off until WrestleMania to show us what his new look is. I don't know if he'll be completely bald or just have short hair, but they're hiding it for now. So I thought he actually looked pretty good in the hood, by the way. He looked pretty sinister. So he comes out to the ring. And, you know, I will say that this was definitely not The Undertaker's strongest promo. He came out. He was almost rambling in certain places, almost maybe like he either forgot what he was saying. He lost his train of thought. And there were people in the crowd who pounced on him. I mean, it was so quiet, you can hear certain fans at ringside saying things like, "You suck, retire." And look, they're free to say that if they want to. I thought it was disrespectful, but fine. But Undertaker's getting all these catcalls. He's not cutting a very good promo. And then the what chants begin. And this is what pissed me off. You have, originally it was like one person, one idiot in an audience of thousands who starts this fucking chant, and like sheep, now you have 10 people. Now you have 50 people. Okay, this wasn't a matter of a handful of people who did the what chant, okay? At one point, it was many, many people who joined in to what The Undertaker after every word. The Undertaker would speak. He made the mistake of pausing, which is something that, again, I think in some ways they almost asked for it by doing that. But he pauses, everyone chants what? He says something else, they chant what? They're whatting The Undertaker. And, you know, I made a comment on Twitter. I wrote that it was such utter disrespect that they should never, ever return to Minneapolis for a show again. And obviously, looking back on that, they should come back to Minneapolis. They will come back to Minneapolis. Although I personally think they probably cost themselves a pay-per-view with this reaction here. And I don't want to paint with such a broad brush. Obviously, not everybody was doing it. There were a lot of people apparently in the building who were very upset, and there were some squabbles even between fans saying, you know, shut up and stuff like that. So there were at least some sensible people in Minneapolis that night. But there were enough people doing this fucking what chant to The Undertaker, and it made me so angry because I've said before how annoying that chant is. You know, that chant was something popularized by Steve Austin over 10 years ago. And so at first it was kind of funny, and it was fun to do, and it was trendy, and it was somewhat relevant. And then Austin retired. And Austin has been retired now for almost a decade. And this fucking chant has continued. It has lived on. And again, it's infected other organizations. I complained a few weeks ago. I was watching Impact. They had a very good show from the UK. And the UK fans started doing what chants in the opening promo with Bully Ray and Bobby Roode. Now, the fans pay their money. They're free. If they want a what, they can go to the show and do the what chant if they want to. But to me, it's disrespectful. It's classless. It has no place in wrestling. It doesn't add to the show. It ruins the show. It absolutely ruins the show, and it ruins it for other people, too. I get that when you're actually in the building, it can be fun to do. I used to do it myself many years ago. I don't do it now because I just think it's stupid. It's outdated. It's such a dated chant. I mean, it's just so ridiculous to think that all these years later, people actually still think it's a fun thing to do. It's stupid. I mean, if you're sitting there and you're doing what, unless there's, you know, a character like R-Truth who actually incorporated it into his gimmick, okay, fine, R-Truth wanted people to what him. He still does. People want him. He says, "Don't want me." And then he stops and says, "Okay, want me." And you know what? Fine. That's cool. That's a cool part of his gimmick. But when a guy like The Undertaker comes down to the ring, I mean, you have to show him at least some level of respect. I don't care if you're not an Undertaker fan. There were people online saying, "I don't like The Undertaker anyway, so why is it okay to want other people but not Undertaker?" It's not okay to want other people. Heel or face, it's a stupid bullshit chant, and you're a stupid person if you think that it's a fun thing to go to the show and interrupt a promo by saying what? I mean, these people are, I think these people have some sort of mental deficiency that causes them to go out there and think that it's appropriate to continue to do this. Undertaker is out there. Yeah, he's not having the best promo. And I think he, you know, the what chant threw him off even more. He was already having a shitty promo. I'll give you that. Not his best night. Not his finest moment. But a guy like this deserves some level of respect. And he wasn't getting that at all from people in this audience on Monday night. I mean, Undertaker had one of the best comebacks to the what chant ever. Back during his big evil days. This was back in 2002. He was whatted during a promo, and so he stopped and he said, you know, say what again if you sleep with your sister. And the fans were like, what? You know, they didn't know what to say. Or maybe they did say what, because they're a bunch of fucking inbreds. I don't remember, but the point is, he couldn't do that here, because that's not part of his character. Obviously, then he was a heel. He wasn't the dead man Undertaker. Now he's a babyface, and he's out there talking about stealing souls and shit like that. So he couldn't do it. I almost wish he would have done it again, just to shut these people up. And I don't think anything short of having Stone Cold Steve Austin himself come on television one day and say, listen, guys, you know, it's time to put this shit to bed. No more what chants, which, of course, this is never going to happen. You know what? Even if they did that, these idiots would still chant what. It's not going to go away. It is what it is. There's nothing I can do about it. But the fact is, it almost single-handedly ruined what turned out to be a hell of a segment. Once Triple H came out, things really started to turn the corner. Triple H has been on fire in a lot of ways over the last couple of weeks with these promos. He's been doing a very good job. He came out, had some back and forth with The Undertaker. Undertaker got better as this segment went on. Triple H again refused a match with The Undertaker, went to leave, and Undertaker kept insulting him. And, you know, Triple H can, you know, see what you're trying to do here, but it's not going to work. And then finally, Undertaker said, you know, I know the reason you won't accept this match is because you realize that your buddy Shawn Michaels couldn't beat me. He couldn't get the job done. And you've always known that Shawn was always better than you. Which, by the way, that's a shoot right there. No offense to Triple H. He's pretty good. Triple H ain't no Shawn Michaels. But I thought that was a hell of a line. That got a great reaction. Triple H took his suit jacket off. He took his tie off. He got back into the ring. Got right up in Undertaker's face. As he's doing this, I was almost hoping he was going to, like, take his hand and flick Undertaker's hood off or something just to embarrass him, but he didn't do that. And in the end, Triple H said, you want your match? You got it. Undertaker Triple H Part 3 at WrestleMania this year, but if we're going to do it, we're going to go all the way. And he said, it's got to be you and me, hell in a cell. And again, this got a great reaction, and it got me really interested in this match. I don't know that this is going to be Undertaker's last match. I hear people postulating that this could be it for both guys. I'm with Jim Ross on Twitter. He responded to a question about this. I don't buy it for a second. I suppose it could be, but I don't go into this match thinking this is going to be Triple H's last match or this is going to be Undertaker's last match. Now, we've got four more weeks to really build this up. It is possible they'll add a stipulation like that saying whoever loses has to retire, or they establish the fact that this is going to be it for both guys. Shawn Michaels obviously is going to factor into this somehow. Perhaps he'll still be the referee in the cell for this match. I don't know. I think the visual of having a Hell in a Cell match in an outdoor stadium is actually going to be really cool. Better, obviously, they wait until later in the show when it gets dark. I don't know that having a Hell in a Cell match outdoors in broad daylight would be really a good idea. And I see people, oh, how are they going to do this? You know, how are they going to hold the cell up? You know, it's in an outdoor stadium, as though WWE made this announcement, and then afterwards they're like, shit, we're actually having WrestleMania outdoors this year. They know that. Obviously, they're going to build a canopy over the ring. They've done that in recent years to hold the lighting and the spotlights and all that kind of stuff. The one thing, as somebody who's actually going to WrestleMania, that does concern me, and my seats are way up there, is that if you're going to have this cell hanging throughout the entire show, because it's not like they're going to open the show with it, at least I don't think, you're going to have this gigantic cell hanging from the canopy above the ring. I could see where that could obstruct the view for a lot of the fans. I hope that's not the case. But believe me, they'll find a way. They'll hang it up there. It'll be a cool visual. And I'm almost positive this match cannot be any worse than the first and only other Hell in a Cell match in WrestleMania history, which was The Undertaker against the Big Boss Man at WrestleMania 15 in 1999. That was the match where the Boss Man got hung at the end of it. That was a terrible match, one of the worst Hell in a Cell matches of all time. I am sure that Triple H and The Undertaker will not have one of the worst Hell in a Cell matches of all time at WrestleMania. And like I said earlier, I think there's a pretty decent shot we'll get blood in this match, whether it gets cleared in advance or not, especially if Undertaker is going into this thinking this could be it for me. What does the guy have to lose? You may as well go out there, have an old-school classic Hell in a Cell battle with the two guys that have had more Hell in a Cell matches than anybody else in WWE history. Go in there, beat the hell out of each other. you know, draw some blood and put on the best show you can possibly put on. Again, I was not a fan of having Triple H Undertaker again. To some degree, I'm still not. But if you're going to do it, I think they're doing it the right way. I'm genuinely excited now to see what these guys are going to pull out of WrestleMania. And I made the comment on Twitter as well. The other good thing about having it as a Hell in a Cell match, Undertaker can't do his crazy-ass dive, which means hopefully he won't kill himself at WrestleMania. Then again, Undertaker has climbed to the top of the cell in the past, so maybe I shouldn't say that. Another good thing on this show was John Cena's promo. Those were words I thought I would never say. At least the end of his promo I thought was really good, and I'll get to that in a second. But this is where my other rant comes into play here. I've got something to say about this. Now, some of the comments that John Cena made in his promo were of a work-shoot nature. Obviously, Cena and Rock are cool with each other. They're working on what they're going to be doing in their match at Mania. This story that there's still bad blood between the two of them, I think, for the most part, is bullshit. I'm sure there's some, the competitive nature. You know, one wants to try to up the other, as they will with their promos, for example. Cena goes out there wanting to one-up The Rock. The Rock will come out and want to one-up Cena. But Cena goes out there and talks about how, you know, do this for the boys in the back, and I've got a love for this business, and I'm always here, and you're not, and this and that, and all the different things that he said. And apparently many of the wrestlers backstage were just popping huge for some of the comments that Cena said. I mean, they were really digging it as though it were a shoot. They agreed with a lot of what he had to say, bashing The Rock and this and that. It was almost like an extension of how a lot of them really genuinely feel about Dwayne Johnson coming back. And PWInsider.com actually received a text message from one of these WWE stars who feels this way. And of course, this person asked to remain anonymous, and they wrote in their text message the following. Okay, this is in reference to The Rock. He comes in to use WWE to get back the audience he lost doing Disney movies, which is fine, but he's been back over a year, and name one person he helped make a bigger star since then. No one. He's here for himself. He keeps to himself, and he keeps someone who's actually touring here all year from making a bigger payday at the bigger shows. It's all about making this the biggest Mania of all time. Okay, then what do we do the rest of the year? Who's been made? You think he took any blame for Survivor Series not drawing? Of course not. But how do you feud with a guy on the Titantron? Cena nailed the guy dead on tonight. Say anything about Triple H and Undertaker still being in the top spot, but if they were needed to work the road, they would. And they would still work their asses off as much as they needed to. Rock is out for Rock, and the idea that he's here to better anything but his own wallet is the biggest work of 2012. End quote. Now, later in the week, in response to a fan question about this on Twitter, where the person asked The Rock, you know, why these people couldn't get over when The Rock was gone, Rock responded, and I'm glad he did, by the way, and he said this. He said, "The ones who are complaining are the ones who will never get over anyway. They're too busy complaining." Before I comment, let me preface this by saying that I am not a WWE superstar. I don't pretend to be one. I am a guy with a microphone and an opinion like anybody else. This person, I assume this anonymous individual, does work for WWE, and I'm sure they work very hard, and they are certainly entitled to their opinion. Also, I know many of you are not necessarily fans of The Rock. You may even agree with how this person feels. This has nothing to do with whether you like The Rock or not. Let's get something straight here, okay? Dwayne Johnson doesn't owe anybody anything. As far as I know, he's not under any sort of contract. He helped carry that company on his back in 2000, along with Triple H, when Steve Austin was out after neck surgery. By all accounts, he was always selfless in putting people over, probably more so than he should have, to be honest with you. He did the touring, he did the live Raws, he did the SmackDowns, the pay-per-views, the house shows, he headlined WrestleMania. He made that company millions of dollars. I don't know who this person is since they're anonymous and all, but I'm willing to bet they haven't made millions of dollars. Okay? They say he's taking a payday from someone on the current roster. Are you for real? What mid-card talent would have gotten Rock's spot if he wasn't on that card? Cody Rhodes? Kofi Kingston? Give me a break. Does this buffoon not understand how much more money he and everybody else is going to make precisely because Rock is in the main event of this show? They have a legitimate shot of setting an all-time Mania record with this show. I still don't think it's going to top the Donald Trump show from 2007, but it very well could. That extra money, however much it may be, will trickle down to everybody else on the card. It's like back in the 80s, you know, WWF would run A-team house shows and B-team house shows. And if guys found out, I mean, I remember B. Brian Blair of the Killer Bees tag team talking about this once in an interview. If they were on the same card with Hulk Hogan at his peak, they were ecstatic. Why do you think that is? Because they knew they'd be selling out the house and making more money. So they were happy to be on the same card with Hulk Hogan. Whether they were jobbing to him, if they were in the opening match, it didn't matter. And with Hogan, you're actually talking about a guy with a track record of putting himself over and looking out for only himself and his friends. I've never heard that about The Rock. But I mean, give me a break. Wrestling is a business. You are in it to make money. Why do you think everyone calls it the business? I'm the best person in the business. I love this business. Business is the key word. There's a reason that word is used. Let's stop and think about this for a second, okay? Let's just stop and think about this. Let's say that Rock didn't come back this year, and instead Stone Cold Steve Austin had decided to come back for one more match against CM Punk, a match that many believe could happen next year at WrestleMania in New Jersey. I hope Mr. Anonymous doesn't find out about that, or else he may have a conniption fit. But let's say that Austin agreed to wrestle Punk in the main event of this year's show. I have a really difficult time believing that these same people would be poo-pooing as much as they are about The Rock. And it makes me wonder why that is. I mean, hell, Austin actually walked out on the company more than once. He walked out on the company. Do they condone that? What about The Undertaker? The guy sits at home all year, comes back for one match at WrestleMania, a match that he always wins. And hell, who's he putting over? His last six WrestleMania matches, including this year, have been against already established top guys who don't need the rub. But oh no, you know, Taker is one of us. He's not out making movies. He's a locker room leader. You know, he destroyed his body for the business. What injury did Rock ever sustain, right? Taker can barely walk around. All of that is true. I don't have a problem with Undertaker coming back once a year and winning at WrestleMania. I don't think he ever should lose at WrestleMania. He's earned that right. He's earned that respect. Unless you're from Minneapolis. But that's my point. The double standard here is glaring. So glaring, I had to pull the fucking blinds closed on my windows. That's how glaring it is. To me, it all boils down to one thing. Sour grapes. That's it. Here's a guy who left. He went on to achieve great success in Hollywood, something that nobody else has ever been able to do at that same level. And yes, he did leave for a long time. You know, that was due to some bad blood between the two sides that was created when they allowed Rock's contract to lapse and then they blamed it on an oversight, like he was some jabroni. You know, Rock felt slighted by that. It led to a rift. But eventually they kissed and made up because it was good for business. Who's been made? That's what this guy asks. Who's been made? Who's been made? The reason this match is happening is because it's one of the only few blockbuster main events that left that they can do. Hogan Austin ain't ever going to happen. You know, it's a battle between two top stars from two distinctly different eras. This is not Rock coming in to put over Jack Swagger. Who is Cena made? He lost to CM Punk at Money in the Bank last summer. Fine. Of late, Cena hasn't exactly made anybody either. The closest thing would be Randy Orton, who put over Mark Henry twice on pay-per-view last year and helped make him a star, a top star. Now, I will admit that in this feud, John Cena has been booked to look extremely weak. I mean, it's been rather lopsided. It's hard for me to blame The Rock for that because the problem lies in how castrated WWE has booked Cena to be, and the hokey scripted material is a very big part of that. This week's promo was a big step up, but what about the last 9 months of goofy comedy and funny faces? Is that Rock's fault too? I mean, my God, here's a guy who put over Brock Lesnar clean as a sheet for the title in the main event of SummerSlam and helped the next big thing become the big thing. Here's a guy who, when he came back and did the Hollywood Rock character in 2003, put Booker T over cleanly in a battle royal like $1 million and even sat there on the ramp after being dumped out of the ring and applauded Booker. And a few weeks after that, he put over the Hurricane in a match. The Hurricane! I mean, to me, it comes down to this, okay? I've only met Rock once before. I found him to be a pleasant guy. That was 13 years ago. I don't know what he's like today. I don't know if he's let all of his success go to his head. I'm not defending The Rock because I'm a Rock fan. I'm defending him from people with an agenda. I said this on Twitter. I'll say it again here. If these guys feel that strongly about Rock not earning his stripes and deserving to be in the main event of WrestleMania, then put your money where your mouth is. Take half of your WrestleMania payday, which will far exceed what you made 2 years ago, I'm sure, when Rock wasn't on the card at all, and donate it to the charity of your choice. Or give it back to Vince McMahon. Either way, whatever you prefer. I can guarantee you that won't happen. You want to know why? Because money talks and bullshit walks. And that's exactly what their argument is. Bullshit. Back to Cena's promo. I thought he did a really good job here, at least as the segment went on. He again complained about Rock not being there. He proceeded to trash his own movies by saying there would be no reunion 2 and 12 rounds probably should have gone 3. But he always showed up to make his shots and never left. And at one point here, Cena actually mocked Rock's comedy shtick, as he called it. And I was just incredulous when I heard that. I mean, of all people to criticize somebody else's comedy, this is John Cena saying this? Really? Really? Anyway, he tried to pretend he was shooting by saying that Vince would probably fine me for saying this, as if. But he said the only reason Rock came back last year was to plug Fast Five and launch his Twitter account, which I'm sure is actually partially true. But this is where I started to turn the corner on this promo, because up until this point, you know, it was the same shit we always hear from Cena. He talked about, you know, the usual stuff about Rock not being there and all that, but he got really good at this point. He talked about how on April 9th, which at first I thought was a botch, and then I realized that Rock is actually scheduled to be on Raw the night after Mania, so he's referring to the Monday after that. He said April 9th, you know, Rock will be on some Hollywood set somewhere laughing at his stunt double, while John Cena will be on Raw entertaining the people. And he said Rock would have to kill him to beat him. He ended by telling Rock, "See you next week, superstar." You could hear his old rapper accent shining through at the end there. I actually thought he did a hell of a job, and I give him a lot of credit for it. You know, normally the John Cena that we see every Monday night cutting promos is absolutely unbearable, I think is the best way to put it. But he was allowed to be a little more edgy. He showed a more serious side, which I'm just begging for him to do more often. I mean, you don't want to be all serious all the time. I mean, that's what Lance Storm is for. But he needs to get serious. You know, we're 5 weeks now, 6 weeks away from WrestleMania, and you've been plugging this match for a year. Cena, as I said earlier, has been taking abuse and abuse and abuse week after week after week. He gets verbally just berated by The Rock. WrestleMania last year, he got a rock bottom. Survivor Series, he got a rock bottom. He really has had no real comeback to what The Rock has thrown at him. And this was a first step, I think, in the right direction. By the end, he had me hooked at the end of that promo. Rock now has to come on TV this Monday and hit one out of the park and not rely on gay jokes and homophobic remarks to do that. I mean, sometimes that can be funny, because Rock delivers it so well, but you can only hear so many pink parts jokes before they get old. You know, this is going to be a real test for Rock, I think, to come out and not just spit out catchphrases and mock Cena, because I criticize Cena for doing that, but Rock also, I think, relies a little bit too much on the same stuff. He needs to get serious also, show some real emotion like Cena did here, and I think if he can do that, this is where things start to really get good with this feud. And then you still have another 4 weeks after that to really sell people on this match. This could, as we get closer to WrestleMania, if built up properly, truly be the biggest WrestleMania match of all time. But it's going to be up to these two guys and the people scripting their stuff to make sure that that happens. We don't need, you know, like we've seen so many times before where they bring a woman into the feud, or, you know, somebody gets hit by a car or some BS like that. They need to let these guys go out there, cut promos on each other. Like I said, don't rely on gay jokes. If you're John Cena, don't just keep saying, "Oh, via satellite." The Rock is here. The Rock is scheduled, I think, for every Raw, maybe except one between now and WrestleMania. So you can't say that anymore. The Rock is going to be there. You've got to come up with something else to really hit him with. And I think if you can do that, it's going to be a very entertaining 4 weeks of television, so we'll see what they come up with this week. It should be pretty interesting. I'm very anxious to see what The Rock has up his sleeve. Now we get to the stuff in the bad column here. I'll just run right through this. Sheamus beat Mark Henry in 2 minutes with the bro kick. My question is why? Just why? You know, what good reason did they have to do this match at all? Why is Mark Henry wrestling if he's still not healed? Why sacrifice him like this? You know, you want to elevate the man who's wrestling for the World Heavyweight title at WrestleMania? Fine. You don't have to do it at Henry's expense. I mean, this was just stupid. Same thing with Santino and Daniel Bryan. Why do a singles match between them? Especially if you were going to run short on time like you did, and the match was only going to go 90 seconds. Santino had a ton of momentum coming off the Elimination Chamber. Yes, he's still a jobber. But the reason this was stupid is because he was already scheduled to be in the Battle Royal at the end of the show. You would think that you would at least want him to maintain that momentum from the night before and get the fans into it before being eliminated, so don't put him on the TV show until it's time for him to come out for the Battle Royal. Instead, they trot him out for a meaningless match first, before the Battle Royal, to make absolutely certain that all of his momentum is dead, and we all know that he's a tool, and we shouldn't care about the guy. And it does nothing for Daniel Bryan, because as we found out the night before, he'd already beaten Santino once. So what was left for him to prove? Again, this was stupid. R-Truth and Kofi Kingston apparently are a tag team now. Okay. They beat the tag team champions Primo and Epico in a match. I guess that makes them the number one contenders for the title, so hooray for tag team wrestling. Then we get to the ugly. Boy, was this ugly. The main event of Raw Monday Night was a battle royal to determine the number one contender to CM Punk's WWE Championship at WrestleMania. After all the ways in which they could have built up this personal animosity between CM Punk and Chris Jericho, they decide to do a battle royal instead. You know? I mean, that was lame. Even worse, this was the second battle royal in less than a week after having just had one on SmackDown, and both coming less than a month after the Royal Rumble. Can you say overkill? I would say so. If I don't see another battle royal until the Rumble next year, I think that would be okay. But this was just, I mean, it really makes you think, though, when Chris Jericho came back with those promos, and a lot of people were very upset. Yeah, they thought that these promos had, you know, messages in them that were going to lead to something, the end of the world as we know it. Even after Jericho finally started speaking, he was still talking about the end of the world is coming. And I really thought in the back of my mind, all right, this is setting something up here. And it's quite obvious the way they've set this title match up with him and Punk at WrestleMania. I mean, just putting Jericho in a regular battle royal and having him win, it really wasn't meant to lead to anything. And that's actually kind of disappointing. I think when we look back on Chris Jericho's big comeback compared to some of his other ones, I think we're going to look back on this one, although I will say, and be disappointed, but I will say the jacket is actually quite awesome. So at least this time around, we got the light bright jacket, I think, as CM Punk called it. So that's a good thing. But this battle royal was not good, and it was not good for a variety of reasons, not the least of which was the end result was a very severe injury to one of the participants and some near-death experiences for some of the other people in this match. Obviously, the big injury was Wade Barrett. Wade Barrett had been eliminated, as was R-Truth. They were both outside the ring. Big Show was in the Battle Royal. He hoisted Dolph Ziggler, poor Dolph Ziggler, hoisted him above his head and was going to throw him out of the ring. And in theory, Wade Barrett and R-Truth would either catch him or at least cushion his fall. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago when Miz sidestepped R-Truth and R-Truth fell to his death outside the ring, and what a ridiculously stupid thing that was on Miz's part. This was similar in that certain people didn't do their job, and I'm not sure exactly what happened. R-Truth had been dumped out a few minutes earlier, and it looked like he may have also had a rough landing, so he may not have been there. It looked like R-Truth may have actually been out of position, ironically enough, talking about Miz being out of position to catch him a couple of weeks ago. I don't know that R-Truth was quite where he needed to be, and so I think what may have happened here is that when Dolph got thrown out of the ring, first of all, it was a bad throw by Big Show. Big Show, I think, overthrew him. Dolph hit the table. I thought he died. Thankfully, he was okay. He was banged up, but he was okay enough to come out for the dark match after the show, but I thought Dolph was seriously, seriously injured, and the announcers did too. At first, even after Barrett got hurt, they were saying, people are coming down to the ring. I think Dolph may have broken his arm or injured his arm. In fact, it wasn't his arm. It was Wade Barrett's arm. And I don't know how it happened. Barrett, I think, perhaps realizing R-Truth maybe wasn't where he needed to be, tried to overcompensate and move his body in such a way where he was in the wrong place. And Dolph fell on his arm. Something happened. And what ended up happening was Wade Barrett suffered a partially dislocated elbow. Now, I've never dislocated my elbow. I have had a dislocated arm, though. It happened when I was much younger. I was actually walking up a flight of stairs, and I slipped. And my mother grabbed my arm to protect me and to catch me and prevent me from falling. But in doing so, she ripped my arm right out of the socket. And the funny thing is, I didn't even realize it at first, and she didn't either. And it wasn't until, I think, 10, 15 minutes later, 20 minutes later, I think I was eating something, and all of a sudden, this pain just came out of nowhere. I was in so much pain. Went to the doctor, and I was crying and, you know, screaming and in so much agony, and the doctor just popped my arm right back in, and I was okay. So that was the extent to which I suffered something kind of similar, but this was just a gruesome injury. And you could tell, you know, Wade Barrett's a tough guy. They talk about he's a bare-knuckle fighter. You look at Wade Barrett's face, his nose is all messed up. You could tell this guy's been in a fight or two in his day. He can hold his own. As soon as Dolph fell on his arm and he kind of looked over at his arm, Wade did, he knew right away he was hurt. He started pounding on the ground with his good arm. He was cursing. They had to, you know, mute the sound because he said, fuck, a few times. I'm sure I would do the same thing. That's how I would react. He was in a lot of pain, and the referees came over. They tried to stabilize his arm, keep him still. People came down to the ring. To me, it took far too long for people to come out to the ring. This guy's laying there in agony. It looked like they were lollygagging and taking their sweet-ass time. But there were a bunch of people who came down, and it was just one disaster after another. Kofi Kingston got dumped out of the ring. And again, if you go back and watch it, Kofi got dumped out of the ring kind of in the corner by the post, and Vicky Guerrero was standing outside the ring in that corner. And so Kofi, almost probably in mid-air, realized that he was going to collide with Vicky and tried to change his trajectory in the middle of his fall, and he kind of fell right, you know, on the steel steps, and very awkward landing. It looked like he may have tweaked his knee. Apparently he's okay, although he was banged up from the chamber because he had to have staples put in his head from the night before. So he was also wounded. And then I mentioned R-Truth getting dumped out. Cody Rhodes was in this battle royal, and his leg was all messed up. I don't know what happened. I'm guessing he probably hurt it at the Elimination Chamber, getting dumped on the steel at some point. His leg was all taped up. I think it might have been a thigh injury. He shouldn't have even been in the battle royal in the first place, but there he was. And he threw Santino Marella out of the ring. And when Santino got thrown out of the ring, I don't know why they did this. They did it on the same side of the ring by the announcers where Wade Barrett had been dumped out. So Wade is still laying out there. He was out there on the floor for a good 10 minutes. He's laying out there with his arm outstretched, being stabilized by the referees. And here comes Santino flying out of the ring. And I think the back of Santino's head when he fell out of the ring hit Barrett's injured arm. So it's like, well, I mean, what's going on here? I mean, it was nuts. And again, Cody was hurt. At one point, Cody, I think, gave Big Show the beautiful disaster kick. And when he came down, he almost crumpled in a heap because he came down and all that weight on his leg, he couldn't support it. And Cody was also wincing and in a great deal of pain. He was down for a few minutes as well before he finally got dumped out of the ring. He couldn't go anywhere because Cody, of course, played into the finish of the Battle Royal. We were basically witnessing a rehash of the 2004 Royal Rumble conclusion that involved Chris Benoit and Big Show. That's the Royal Rumble that WWE would like us to forget ever happened. But it was that finish where Benoit kind of had Big Show in a front face lock, and Big Show puts him over the top rope and is trying to dump him out, but Benoit hangs on for dear life, and slowly but surely, you know, he's bringing Big Show's weight along with him, and Big Show ends up falling out of the ring. Well, that's exactly what was happening here with Jericho and Big Show. Cody came back over, helped eliminate the Big Show, and Chris Jericho is your winner. Even Jericho, after the Battle Royal was over, had a face-to-face in the ring with CM Punk, who was doing color commentary. And I thought, you know, some of the things Punk was saying seemed a little out of place. I mean, you know, Barrett is clearly injured, and he's laying right out there in front of Punk, and Punk is cracking jokes about what the EMT looks like, Buck Zumov and all this stuff. I just thought that was a little callous on his part. But, and if he's a heel, I guess you can make an excuse for it, but he's not. So Jericho left the ring, and he's, you know, mouthing to the referee, what happened to Wade? And it was just a complete disaster. This Battle Royal was a total disaster. It never should have even happened. You know, setting up Jericho and Punk this way was probably the weakest way you could have gone about doing it. You may as well just have had Jericho win the Royal Rumble, if that's what, you know, you were going to do. And that was Raw. Not a very happy way to end the show. You know, Wade Barrett, everybody knew he was seriously injured. This was not a worked injury. We just didn't know if his arm was broken. We didn't know anything except that this guy was really messed up. And it kind of took me out of the show. I think it took some of the people in the crowd out of the show, too. Even the Santino stuff didn't get quite as loud. I mean, it got a reaction, but not quite as loud as I thought it would be, because I think a lot of people's attention was kind of focused on what was going on outside the ring. So just an absolute disaster. WWE is just, it's the walking wounded right now. I mean, there's so many injured people. That's why Mark Henry is still having matches. even though I'm sure his groin is not fully healed. Now Cody's leg is messed up. R-Truth has been banged around. Kofi's got staples in his head. Barrett apparently is going to be out a minimum 6 to 8 weeks. He's very dicey for WrestleMania. He's a tough guy. If he wants to be on the card, I guess he'll be there, but it's not looking too good for him at WrestleMania. And it's interesting because it looks like WWE is doing something with Cody Rhodes and the Big Show. And we know the stories about Shaq. Shaq supposedly reached a deal many, many weeks back with WWE to come in for a match at WrestleMania. It was never confirmed it was going to be a singles match with Big Show, but a lot of people figured it would be. In fact, Shaq may have been the one to mention that on the radio once, which I think WWE was not happy about. Now it sounds as though, you know, some people are saying, well, Shaq may not be wrestling. In fact, WWE themselves put a story out on their website saying that despite things that Shaq himself is saying in the media, he is not going to be at WrestleMania. To me, when I read the story on WWE.com, it reeked of a work. Why would they even comment on it on their own website if it wasn't going to happen? And why would Shaq be going around constantly saying, I'm going to be at WrestleMania, I'm going to be at WrestleMania, if he wasn't going to be there? Something just doesn't add up here. I'm almost convinced that Shaq is going to be at WrestleMania. He will be participating in some way. It may not be a singles match with Big Show, but it's just interesting to see Big Show and Cody starting some sort of feud. You know, Cody's been mocking him. You know, Big Show doesn't exactly have a sterling record at WrestleMania. I think maybe he's only won one WrestleMania match, maybe two. His win-loss record is quite lopsided in the loss column, and it would look to me as though they're setting up a WrestleMania match between the two of them. To me, Big Show versus Cody does nothing for me. No offense to either guy, Cody is a guy who I think that he's got a lot of upside, and he's going to be a bigger star even than he is now. Big Show is Big Show, but a Big Show-Cody match at WrestleMania just does absolutely nothing for me. One thought that I had is that, and maybe this is why Barrett was so upset once he realized how injured he was, if they're not going to go in the direction of Big Show versus Shaq, it almost seemed to me like perhaps they were setting up for a tag team match at WrestleMania. And this is just pure speculation on my part, where Big Show would team up with Shaquille O'Neal to take on the team of Cody Rhodes and Wade Barrett. Cody and Wade, I think, have had some tag team matches together recently. They were the two sole survivors in their Survivor Series match and all that. So there's been a relationship there between the two of them. And, you know, perhaps you have the two cocky, arrogant heels who have an issue with Big Show. Shaq, how he gets introduced into all this, I don't know. That's for the writers to come up with. But it almost seems to me like maybe they were setting up for that tag team match. And now with Wade Barrett injured and likely out of WrestleMania, even if he actually can make the card, you can't plan on having him there. So with Wade out of the picture, perhaps it fucked up WWE's plans and they don't quite know what they're going to do now. But again, that's just pure speculation on my part. I could be completely wrong about it. So we'll see what direction they go in here. But again, this Battle Royal was an absolute train wreck to what was otherwise, you know, a show that was really all about Undertaker, Triple H, Rock and John Cena. I thought those issues, and even the Eve stuff, which I enjoyed, but those issues, focusing on the two top WrestleMania matches, was really, really well done. And I think that really made the show for me. Even with all the other BS and short matches and all that kind of stuff. By the way, I did see the CM Punk Daniel Bryan match on SmackDown this week. I was hoping for a clean finish just because the last match they had a couple of weeks ago, which was also very good, had that fuck finish where Chris Jericho ran in, and I was actually okay with that. So I figured, oh, they're going to do a rematch. It's on SmackDown. Maybe we'll get a winner this time. Unfortunately, there was no winner. CM Punk won a fall, then the match was ordered to continue. Daniel Bryan won a fall, it was ordered to continue. And then we had the finish where both guys' shoulders are on the mat. The referee counts the three anyway because he's an idiot. And so we went off the air, I think, without having a winner announced, unless I missed something. But for the time they had, and they gave them like a good 15 minutes or so, CM Punk and Daniel Bryan had a hell of a match on Friday night. So if you didn't see that, I would suggest you find a copy of it on YouTube and go watch it right now. Speaking of CM Punk, that leads into this next story here, which a lot of you wanted me to comment on. I actually didn't comment on it last week after it initially broke, and I wasn't going to say anything about it, but it's become such a big deal now, and I've got another little mini rant here to get out of my system, so I'll talk about it. And that is the situation with CM Punk and Chris Brown. Now, the way this all started, apparently somebody on Twitter asked CM Punk a question, I think is how it started. And Punk made a comment, a derogatory comment about Chris Brown. If you're Chris Brown, obviously I could see where you would be upset about it. But Punk has no love lost for Chris Brown or anybody, apparently, who puts their hands on a woman. And of course, Chris Brown, for those of you who don't know, is a singer. and he was dating another singer, Brianna, many years ago, and he beat the crap out of her. And there's photos on the web. He assaulted her and was ordered to stay away from her. And actually, in recent days, stories have come out that they are collaborating on music, and this has people up in arms. How could she go back and work with him after he beat her up and all this other stuff? So basically, Chris Brown is a piece of slime. And CM Punk was just pointing out the obvious. And I actually applaud Punk for his candor on this subject. I happen to think Chris Brown, like I said, he's slime. He's a waste of space. And not just because of what he did to Rihanna. I just, based on everything I hear and things that he does, the way he behaves and acts towards other people, things he says on Twitter, and these meltdowns that this guy has, he obviously has anger management issues. And, you know, forget the Rihanna thing for a second. I figured out that Chris Brown was a piece of garbage after that stunt he pulled after an appearance last year on Good Morning America, which is a morning TV show here in the States for all of our international listeners out there. He was on Good Morning America for an interview and kept getting asked about the Rihanna thing. And I'll give him that. You don't want that thrown in your face every 5 minutes. I mean, the Rihanna thing happened 3 or 4 years ago at this point. But still, I mean, the guy, you know, finishes the interview. He goes backstage and freaks out, just has an absolute total freak out. He's screaming. He's shouting. He grabs a chair. He shatters a window with the chair. Shards of glass fall down onto the street below. And this is Times Square, so you got a lot of people out there. He's lucky nobody got hurt. Then he rips off his shirt and he leaves the building. I mean, who behaves like that? A crazy person, that's who. I mean, it's actually kind of funny that the Chris Brown stuff comes up because he just performed at the Grammy Awards a couple of weeks ago. You know, this was only about 2 weeks ago. Chris Brown performed at the Grammys. And after the show, an article went up on BuzzFeed.com called 25 Extremely Upsetting Reactions to Chris Brown at the Grammys. You can Google it if you want to. It listed 25 different tweets. I think in some cases there may have been some Facebook statuses. But for the most part, it was 25 tweets from Chris Brown fangirls leaping to his defense from all the people who were upset about him performing on the show. Because, again, after what he did to Rihanna, he was kind of an outcast for a little while. And, obviously, I mean, who would want anything to do with somebody like that? And he's kind of been mounting a comeback and all this. But there's still a lot of people who don't think much of him and were very upset to see him performing on this mainstream award show. So here's a sample of some of those tweets from this article that was listed. These tweets come directly from our Young Ladies of America. Doesn't this make you proud to be an American? Listen to some of these tweets, okay? This one girl says, "Call me crazy, but I would let Chris Brown beat me up any day." This other one says, "Everyone shut up about Chris Brown being a woman beater. He can beat me up all night if he wants. Chris Brown could beat me all he wants. He is flawless." And this other one says, "Dude, Chris Brown can punch me in the face as much as he wants to, just as long as he kisses it." How am I part of the same gene pool as these people? Dumb shits these women are. So I just wanted to bring that up. For those of you who may not be familiar with Chris Brown and all this, he's been in the news quite a bit of late, and it's kind of funny the CM Punk thing would come up, because when I read that article on BuzzFeed.com, I thought it was a joke. I thought I was reading an article from The Onion or Cracked.com or something. But no, this is real. These were real tweets put out by the Young Ladies of America. So Punk made the media rounds this week. He appeared on CNN Headline News to talk about the story. He did a radio interview with Hot 97 here in New York and took calls from some very angry Chris Brown fans. And to Punk's credit, he was on his A-game. There was one woman who called into the radio show and said, "You know, I was raised that if a woman raises his hand to a man," and supposedly Rihanna hit him first, but again, that doesn't excuse bad behavior. Bad behavior does not excuse more bad behavior. That doesn't give you a license to hit a woman just because she may have smacked you first. As CM Punk said, he's been in that situation himself. I'm sure he's been smacked by a few women in his day. He walked away from situations like that. But this woman called up and said, "I was raised that if a woman hit a man could hit her back." And CM Punk is just like, "Well, you were raised wrong." I thought that was a great answer. But again, Punk got some publicity out of it. WWE got some publicity out of it. Chris Brown has more than 8 million Twitter followers. And apparently Punk picked up quite a few of them himself due to all this. At least the WWE champion is actually in the headlines for something after taking a backseat to Rock and Cena and Undertaker and Triple H. But I see where people are thinking that because WWE mentioned the controversy on TV this week, Michael Cole was going crazy about it on SmackDown. and they mentioned it on their website. This must mean that it's a work. They're in on it. Chris Brown's going to fight CM Punk. It's not a work, people. Okay? I watched the end of SmackDown. CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, like I said, they had a great match. Michael Cole kept going on and on and on about Punk and about Brown and how, oh my God, Chris Brown just tweeted this back to Punk and now it's the number one trending term on Twitter right now. This came off so low rent. I felt sorry for him having to say this. I mean, they sounded so desperate to make themselves seem relevant and important. It was pathetic. It was pathetic. But I do have to say this. I talked earlier about double standards, right, with Rock and all that. If CM Punk really feels this way about someone who would beat up a woman, then I can only assume in no way, shape, or form would Punk be interested in the possibility of a match with Steve Austin at next year's WrestleMania, seeing as how Austin allegedly beat up his own wife, Deborah, in 2002 and left her with two black eyes, two swollen cheeks, and welts on her back. It's certainly a question worth asking Punk if he feels that strongly about people who would put their hands on a woman. I'm just saying. It's just some food for thought. One last note here. You will note that, yet again, the Funkasaurus was not on Raw this week. This now makes 3 weeks. I'm starting a Free the Funkasaurus campaign here on the Sound Off. It's now been 3 weeks since he has been held in captivity. That is, kept off television. According to the latest Wrestling Observer newsletter, Vince McMahon thought that Big Brodus was a reckless worker, and he does not want him out there on television until he is safer to work with. Now, it's worth noting that WWE just had a house show, I believe, last night in L.A., and Brodus competed as the Funkasaurus. I think he came out with his dancers and everything. He was in the opening match. So, you know, if he's an unsafe worker, why would he let him work house shows, but not TV? Although I guess in theory, the theory is that on the house shows, depending on who he works with, that's the only way he's going to learn and get better. But still, I do wonder about this. But that is the story going around, that Vince took him off because he was reckless and he was an unsafe worker. And to that, all I say is just please. You know, if you're taking the guy off TV because he's supposedly unsafe out there, which I personally didn't see any of that in the matches on TV, but if supposedly he is unsafe, then you should take half your roster off TV with some of the careless shit we've seen in just the last few weeks. Time for a few Sound Off shout-outs. I want to give a thanks to Jacob Pig for his review in iTunes, as well as Michael Devery, who was actually he actually left me my first iTunes review way back in 2009. A trendsetter this guy was. So thanks to both of you for that. A couple of other shout-outs here. Jonathan Fleming, big fan of the show. He celebrated a birthday on February 22nd, so happy belated birthday to him. Sucks when your birthday falls right smack in the middle of the week, doesn't it? Matt I turns 26 today, as a matter of fact, so happy birthday to Matt. I know he's a big fan of the show. And Tommy from Salisbury, Maryland, who is celebrating a birthday on March 11th. He also would like a shout-out for his friend John, who deep down, he says, is a huge mark for Santino Marella. Well, then he must have loved the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. Not so much Raw Monday night, but if he watched the pay-per-view, he probably had a good time. So those are the shout-outs for this week. Let's get to the mailbag. If you have questions, shout-outs, comments, and the like, you can email me to thesolomonster@gmail.com. thesolomonster@gmail.com is the only email address that you can reach me, legitimate email address that you can reach me. So that's the place to do it. Let's get into some of these questions here. This first one comes from Liam, who writes in. He says, Solomonster, I came up with an idea that I don't really think has been implemented in the history of wrestling or has come up before, but I'd like your opinion on it. And basically he goes into, I don't want to read the whole thing here, but he's advocating something of a ranking system that sounds very similar, as I mentioned to him here in my email back to him, very similar to an idea that I pitched back on episode 127 of the Sound Off when I did my WWE business review show and I outlined many of the changes I would make and ideas that I would implement if I were in charge. One of my ideas that you may recall from that episode was this idea for what I referred to as a power ranking system, where each world title in WWE would have a top 10 list of contenders, and all the other titles would have a top 5. And people could follow along on WWE.com. They could really get into it. You know, my idea is that people get title shots these days for no apparent reason, which I think is what Liam is arguing also. This at least would give it some meaning. and it would be fun for fans to follow along. Plus, if you wanted to have, let's say, someone leapfrog who was ranked at number 8, and you really wanted that person to be next in line or one of the next contenders for the championship for storyline purposes, you can do a match, you know, between the number 8 seed and the number 3 seed with the provision that if number 8 beats number 3, then he takes his spot. You know, you could do that. At least then, when you do it like that, it makes sense that this person is going to get a title shot. And it's not like just one day Daniel Bryan is having a match for the title, which you know is going to happen one of these days, with Santino. This was a non-title match on Monday night, but let's say it was a championship match. What sense would that make? But I could easily see WWE doing something like that, at least if Santino somehow cracked the top 10 and had a match with Wade Barrett and pulled off the upset of the century, and Wade Barrett happened to be the number one contender. Well, now Santino is, you know? At least it would make sense of these things. TNA tried a ranking system, it's either last year or in 2010, I think it might have been, after Hogan and Bischoff joined the company, but they didn't handle it properly, and it pretty much died a death. I mean, there were rankings in there that just absolutely made no sense whatsoever, and then they just kind of dropped it one day, and that was the end of that. This question comes from John in Chicago. Love the show as always. Now, we know that Drew McIntyre is in the middle of a losing streak on SmackDown. It has been for weeks. My question is, why are losing streak angles even used? I can't remember any time where it worked to the wrestler's favor. Daniel Bryan, Sheamus, and John Morrison each went through them during the last 2 years or so, and they look like complete jokes. To me, the losing streak angle just seems a bit counterintuitive. Thankfully, Sheamus and Bryan overcame them months later, but for guys like Morrison, MVP, and Drew McIntyre, it can really destroy their credibility. Also, if you were in charge of booking a losing streak angle, how would you do it? As I told John, you know, losing streak angles can be a career killer more often than not. Drew was in the doghouse for a while, but apparently this storyline is part of some new way to push him, according to Vince McMahon. I say good luck with that because, you know, it's not going to do the guy any good, I don't think. But the only way I would work a losing streak angle is the way that they did it for Ric Flair back in 2008. Or I guess it would have been 2007 into 2008. And actually, I'm not even sure if... I was going to look this up and I forgot to. I could be completely wrong about this. I know that there was at least an idea. Actually, Steve Austin was the one who had came to WWE Creative with an idea on how to do an angle with Ric Flair right before his retirement, and I think Austin basically got ignored, and they did their own idea. So this, actually, I may be remembering an angle that never even happened, but perhaps it did. But Flair loses his confidence in the process by losing match after match after match, and then is told that if he loses one more match, he would be fired. And that way, every time that Flair would step in the ring, people knew that there was something on the line, and they could get behind the guy as he starts racking up wins again. Again, I don't remember if that's exactly how that angle worked. If not, it should have, because to me, that's how you do it. If you're going to do a losing streak angle, if you must do it, get people emotionally invested. Give them a reason to want to see this guy go out there and finally win the big one instead of going out there and people sit on their hands because they've been conditioned to think that this guy means nothing, and so therefore we don't give a shit. But to me, if I was going to do a losing streak angle, that's how I would do it. You got to have the guy lose and lose and lose and lose, and he just loses his confidence. He's down in the dumps and is flat out told, listen, it's like a UFC fighter. You know, you lose a certain number of fights, and at some point you're going to be cut, or they're going to tell you point blank, if this guy loses one more fight, there's a pretty good chance he's going to be cut. All of a sudden, that lights a fire under the guy's ass, and he goes out there and kicks ass and saves his job, and the people can get behind him. And I think that's really the best way to go about doing something like that. Tommy writes into the Sound Off, Dear Salamos, I just wanted to write in and congratulate you on your success. I've been a loyal listener since 2009 and even have my friend tuning into your show now. At first, I thought you were very critical of everything, but you've grown on me over this time. See, I'm like a fungus. I just grow on you. Anyway, Tommy says, I'm an insurance salesman. I look forward to listening to your podcast during my travels. I have discovered that there are a lot of podcasts for wrestling out there, but I have to say yours is so professionally done compared to most. I would love to hear you debate some of the others out there. My question for you is, do you listen to other podcasts, and what made you decide to start your own? I think it's cool that you get to show your love of wrestling this way. Well, thank you for the kind words. I do listen to other shows when I have time. You know, usually when that happens, it's in transit, like on the bus or the train coming home from work or something. I don't have as much time as I would like to, but there are certain shows on occasion that I do listen to. As far as why I started this show. I think I've talked about this before. I've gotten this question, but really, it started out of being a favor to a friend. Again, Webmaster Mike is the one who has run SCScoops.com and has done a fine job of doing that now for several years. And when the site was really starting to get going, he was looking for some original content and had come to me. And I actually don't remember if it was my idea or his idea, but it was to kind of bolster the website and add some color to the website. And at that point, I came up with the idea of, doing the podcast and calling it The Sound Off. And I didn't know how long it would last. I really didn't have any sort of long-term plan. I said, sure, I'll start doing it for you, no problem. And I did the first show, and then I did the second show. And slowly but surely, after a while, I did 20, and then I did 50, and then I did 100. Now I've done over 200, and here we are. So that's kind of how we got the ball rolling on that and why I've been a part of SEScoops.com specifically for this length of time. So now you know the backstory there, and I don't regret that decision for a minute. Walter writes into The Sound Off. How's it going? Before I get to my question, I just want to say that my cousin and I got another Solomaniac hooked on The Sound Off last week. He's an indie wrestler out of Chicago and now really enjoys your show. You're welcome. My question has to do with the year 2002. It was the year that I started watching wrestling, and next month will mark 10 years of being a fan. It got me thinking 2002 was a huge year for WWE. We saw the debuts of Brock Lesnar, John Cena, Batista, and Randy Orton. It marked the returns of both Shawn Michaels and Hollywood Hulk Hogan with the NWO. We also saw the end of the World Wrestling Federation and the beginning of both World Wrestling Entertainment and the Raw and SmackDown brand extension. Kane came back with a new mask, and the first Elimination Chamber came coupled with a world title win for Shawn Michaels. That was his only world title win in the second part of his career. While Hogan beat Triple H for the Undisputed Championship at Backlash as well, and who could forget the Icon vs. Icon Rock and Hogan match at WrestleMania 18. It really says something about The Rock that 10 years after him and Hogan, it's now Rock and Cena in a match that's almost as big. All this added to top moments that I'm failing to remember. What were some of your favorite moments from 2002? 2002 was an interesting year for WWE. Until you put it into words like that, you really don't realize how big of a year it was for the company. But it really was. Like you said, the first Elimination Chamber match, Shawn Michaels coming back to the ring after a lot of people figured he wasn't going to, his first match back in 4.5 years. Hogan back in WWF for the first time in 9 years. I'd say that's a pretty big deal, as well as Hall and Nash. Hogan goes from black and white back to the red and yellow, wins another world championship, probably his last in WWE. Brock Lesnar debuted. That was a breakout year for Brock Lesnar. In the same year he debuted, he won the King of the Ring and beat The Rock in the main event of SummerSlam for the Undisputed title. He beat Undertaker in a very bloody Hell in a Cell match at No Mercy that year. The image of Brock Lesnar lifting Big Show up for the F5, it's kind of funny now because we look back on that now and it almost doesn't even seem like a big deal. But back then, when he put Big Show up on his shoulders, it was a moment. It was like an Andre slamming, or rather Hogan slamming Andre type of moment, one for the highlight reel. And it was a very big year for the company. I had a lot of memorable moments from that year. Certainly the Jeff Hardy Undertaker ladder match is a memorable moment from 2002. I was a fan of the build-up to the Rock-Brock Lesnar match for SummerSlam. It was one of the few, if not the only match that, main event WWE promoted then and maybe since then. Until maybe Rock and Cena now, it almost seems like they're taking the approach of building it up like a boxing match or a UFC fight with these videos that they're doing. I like it, and I want to see them do more of that. But the build-up to the Rock-Brock match in 02, the sports build, it was a pure sports build. There was no comedy, there was no drama with a woman or some goofy gimmick or storyline. It was built up like a real sports main event. And aside from Paul Heyman sticking his nose in the middle of the match, there was no real interference. Like I said, Brock beat Rock clean as a sheet. It was a memorable night. It was a big deal. And I really liked it, and I regret that they never really built any other main events of theirs like that again. It's kind of like TNA when they built up the Samoa Joe-Kurt Angle cage match back in 2006. The build-up to that match, which I think was the brainchild of Dutch Mantel, who they later fired, was tremendous, and they did their biggest buy rate ever. I think they did over 60,000 buys for that TNA pay-per-view. TNA's lucky to get 6,000 buys. Most of the time they get, in the range of 8 to 10. But, again, consider what they got then and the way they built that match, and they never, ever built another match that way again. It's something I just don't understand with these wrestling promoters. I don't get it. It's like it's like they stumble across an idea, maybe by accident, that they didn't actually think would work. They didn't like it, but they felt like other people wanted them to do it. So they almost did it out of spite, and then it worked, and they actually made money on it. And then because they hated the idea in the first place, and just despite the other person whose idea it was in the first place, they said, fuck you, we're not going to do that again. It's like, really? I mean, what's wrong with these people? But yeah, 2002, the return of Hogan. I mean, when I was younger, I was a Hulk Hogan fan. I've admitted that before. And so seeing Hogan back was almost, you know, kind of surreal. You know, speaking of surreal, the other thing you forgot to mention was that was also the year that Eric Bischoff came to WWE. He had that warm embrace on Raw when with Vince McMahon when he was made the general manager of Monday Night Raw. That's another moment in time that I never thought I would live to see. And even that, I think they kind of botched. I mean, by having Vince and Eric hug. I mean, for God's sake, all the money they left on the table. It's just ridiculous. But still, that was a moment. But let us not forget, as good of a year as 2002 might have been, it was also the year that gave us Katie Vick. Okay, one of the worst storylines, the worst abominations of creative in the history of professional wrestling, and it came in 2002. So it was not a perfect year by any stretch of the imagination. Bruce writes in, my question is, with Chris Jericho accusing everyone of being a poor ripoff of him, why didn't he bring up The Miz using the breakdown as the skull-crushing finale? I think a stolen finisher makes the case for people stealing his gimmick. Yeah, in fairness, Jericho ripped the move off from Jeff Jarrett, who probably ripped the move off from somebody else, who ripped the move off from somebody else before that. So he would be in no position to criticize Miz for using it, being that Jericho did the same thing. Troy writes in, I read a story a while ago, and I don't know if it's true. I read that Chris Benoit actually became WCW champion before he left WCW to go to WWE. Even though he became champion, he decided to leave anyways. Is that true? Yes, it is true. Benoit actually beat Sid Vicious at their January pay-per-view in 2000. I think that might have been Sin or Sold Out or whatever it was. And he beat him for the WCW title, and they did that as a way to try to get Benoit to stay and make him happy, but he had already made up his mind at that point to leave. You know, the company was just a sinking ship. Kevin Sullivan, I believe, had the book. He was the booker at the time. And obviously, Kevin Sullivan and Chris Benoit were not exactly friends. There was no love lost there. Benoit was married to, I believe, woman was also married. I don't think she was just boyfriend, girlfriend. I think she had been married to Kevin Sullivan. Now she was with Benoit. There was a lot of heat there. So anyway, he figured, hey, even if they put the title on me, I'm going to get screwed anyway. So about a week or two after that is when he showed up on Raw. You know, WCW hedged its bets with the finish. If you go back and really look at it, they told Sid to make sure his leg was positioned under the bottom rope when he tapped out to the crossface. They figured if Benoit did leave, that would be their out. You know, they would have an excuse to then just put the title back on Sid and say, hey, you know, listen, his foot was under the rope, so technically Benoit never won. Or Benoit was being stripped or whatever, because I guess Benoit is considered a WCW champion. I don't think they ever reversed the decision. I could be wrong. But that's why that was done. And so, yes, Chris Benoit did win the title, and it didn't really mean much because he ended up in WWE a couple weeks later anyway. And not only that, you know, the worst part about that, if you really think about it, is that WWE, I mean, we talk about botched storylines. I mean, you talk about the invasion. Some people like the invasion. There were parts of the invasion I liked. But the invasion was nothing like what it could have been and nothing like what it should have been. And they botched it. Eric Bischoff came into WWE and they had him hug Vince McMahon. Botched. But you talk about botched angles. You look at Chris Benoit was the WCW champion. He beat Sid for the belt. He never lost it. And now, a week or two later, he's in WWE. And his second night in the company, the very next night on SmackDown, they tape a main event, Chris Benoit, basically the legitimate WCW champion, against Triple H, and they have Triple H just beat him clean. They could have milked that for something, the champion of this organization against the champion of this organization, and they just beat Benoit down that first night like he was nothing. It's just mind-boggling. Last question comes from Mike Gallagher. What match do you believe will or at least should go on last at WrestleMania? The WWE title match, seemingly the most important belt in the company, and possibly the best true wrestling match on the show. Cena Rock, the biggest draw in the Moneymaker match, or Triple H Undertaker, which is quite possibly one of their last matches, if the career on the line rumors are to be believed. You know, I'm surprised that people are even asking this question. On the one hand, you're right. There's a lot of debate about this because WWE right now has three matches that any of those three could be considered a main event on any pay-per-view. That's good. That's why I think WrestleMania is going to do very well this year. But the only match that should go on last, and I believe it will, is Rock and John Cena. I'm almost flabbergasted that this is even up for debate. This whole show is being built around Rock versus Cena. All the posters, all the ads, everything. Rock and Cena. This is a match that was announced a year in advance. This has had 12 months of build. It's The Rock's hometown of Miami. This is the only match that makes sense to go on last, and it will. That's it for the mailbag. If you have questions, once more, thesolomonster@gmail.com is the email address to send all of that good stuff to. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/solomonster, and friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/thesolomonster. I have a YouTube channel as well. My username on there is thesolomonster, and of course, I am always indebted to those of you who are kind enough to leave a brief review of the show in iTunes. You just type in the name of the show, Solomonster Sounds Off. It'll come right up. We have some great reviews, great ratings, and hopefully slowly but surely working our way up the iTunes charts, if you will. So all that good stuff. Raw this Monday night. The Rock is back. He will be live to rebut John Cena's promo from this past week. And again, he's got to really come back at Cena and hit him hard, kind of like he did in that video promo that he taped last year where he was on a mountaintop somewhere and he cut this promo. I think it might have been the promo where he announced he was coming back at Survivor Series, or I think he was teasing that he was going to be in Madison Square Garden. This was before the tag team match was officially announced. And Rock laid it out perfectly in that video when he basically called John Cena. He said, John, the reason people don't like you, the reason that the men don't like you is because you're a phony. You're a phony little punk. And he was kind of honing in on that feeling that people have that when Cena goes out there, he's not as genuine as he wants people to think he is. He's out there pretending to be something he's not, whether he's pretending to be a Marine or whatever the case may be. That's the kind of promo Rock has to come out and get right up in Cena's face with, and I think he'll do a pretty good job this Monday night. We'll find out. So that's the deal for this week. We'll be back next weekend with episode 208. Until next time, be well, stay safe. Thank you all for your support. I really appreciate it, and we'll see you right back here next week.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com.